You have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here. I am back with another special guest episode today. I have with me the amazing Patrick Lang. He is the president of Business Modification Group. Patrick, welcome to the Business Broker Growth Show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And I am too. I know I say this in the intro all the time, and then I reference saying that all the time in the intro. I'm excited because A, we've been trying to make this happen for a while, and mostly it's been scheduling things on my side. But you are a busy guy, which we will talk about in this episode, because you are the most road warrior business broker that I know, doing amazing things. So getting you to be in the studio for any length of time has been a scheduling thing for us. But I'm also really excited because of what you focus on, what you do as a niche that you have pretty much dominated. These are gonna be my words, dominated, perfected. You know, you can't perfect it, it's a practice, but let's talk about this because your main focus is HVAC. And as I know, because other people have said this, the niche finds you. You don't find the niche. You don't pick that. So let's talk about kind of your journey into business brokerage first, and then evolving into the world of HVAC.
Wow. Okay. We'll go way back then. So it's kind of crazy. I'll be fast at the beginning and then maybe slow down at the end. It'll tie in together. So initially, in my first shot at adulthood, I had a financial planning company. So we did investments, insurance, that type of thing. I sold that business. And most people have a midlife crisis and buy a Corvette. I had one and I bought a swimming pool service company. So I traded a suit and tie for flip-flops and a tank top and started cleaning swimming pools. And I wanted a break. I believe life's supposed to be fun. And I really believe you can make money doing anything. I think you just have to find what it is and a way to be profitable at it. And so sold that business, got in the swimming pool cleaning, and we got huge quickly, partially through marketing, partially through doing a good job, and then others through acquisitions. We were buying out smaller companies, growing them, and realized that there was a business to be had by buying these smaller companies, growing them, and we were selling them off. And so we were in Central Florida, covering probably five counties. We had trucks going in every direction, and it was a lot of work. And I realized it was crazy. People cared more about their swimming pool than they did about their finances, right? In the financial planning business, I never got called on Christmas Day or Thanksgiving or 4th of July, but it seemed every Christmas, every Thanksgiving, every 4th of July, somebody was calling about their swimming pool. And so probably did that for 5 years, sold that business off. And when I sold it, we were so big and covered such a big area, I think I couldn't find one buyer. So we ended up breaking it off and selling it off in sections, not knowing what I was doing, right? I mean, we were buying, growing, selling, and someone came to me that was impressed with how fast we had grown and asked me if I would teach them about growth. We started doing a little bit of consulting work. I was at a B&I meeting and I met a business broker and I didn't know what a business broker was. So B&I has these one-on-one meetings. I don't remember what the name of them is, something like one-on-one. And I met with a guy and he's like, I'm a business broker. What do you do? And he told me, and I'm like, man, I've been doing that for myself for the last 5 or 6 years. Can you make any money at it? So anyways, we talked about it. And he says, well, yeah, you have to get a Florida real estate license. So I went, sat for the exam, got a Florida real estate license. Here's how naive I was in it. I went to Century 21 and big Century 21 office in Punta Gorda, Florida, and went in and said, hey, I got a real estate license. I want to be a business broker here. Can I do it? And they said, sure, come on in. Well, I didn't know they knew less about business brokerage than I did. So my first year as a business broker, I think I made $9,000 in total. And probably 6,000 of that was selling a couple pieces of vacant land in the town I lived in. So to say I struggled was an understatement. And I'm active in Business Brokers of Florida, which I think is an incredible organization. And so I started following kind of what they do and what other brokers do there. And we co-broke in the state of Florida. So I was able to find buyers, bring them to sellers' deals, and then I could see the sims they put together, and I could see what they did. And so I found a way to become a business broker and read everything I could on it. And then we were able to achieve some levels of success. We were fortunate to sell a lot of businesses. Not sure if I made any money, but we sold a bunch. And probably, I'm guessing 5 years into it, 4 years into it, something like that, my wife and I decided to move to North Florida, where we live now. And I looked, and there wasn't the business brokerage that there is in Central Florida. I thought, man, it's an untapped market. I'm going to move there, and everything's going to be fantastic. And we moved to North Florida to a tiny little town, and I realized there's nobody moving there trying to buy businesses, right? If you're in Fort Myers or Sarasota or, you know, a coastal community in the state of Florida, if you got a good listing, there was enough people moving there that you could sell it, right? So the key was to be decent at getting a listing, and the buyers would come. Well, I moved to North Florida, and I could get tons of listings, and I couldn't find any buyers. So I was driving back and forth 4 hours to listing appointments and meeting appointments. At the time, I was doing everything. Bars, restaurants, gas stations, flower shops, you name it, I sold it, much of which didn't generate a lot of revenue because they were small mom-and-pop businesses. And I'm living in North Florida. My son, my youngest son, played baseball. At the baseball field, a parent said to me, hey, I've got a heating and air company. Will you sell it? And I went to list it, and I love the business. I love businesses with barriers to entry. In Florida, I often joke, I bought it because I don't know a husband dumb enough to tell his wife he's not fixing the air conditioner in the summertime, right? I mean, it's not a want, it's a need, right? And other parts of the country, it's heat or whatever it happens to be. So I bought it, ran it for a few years, and we were fortunate to grow it. And I continued doing brokerage, but not full-time like it was. My wife and others probably call me a workaholic. I enjoy working. It's something I get a lot of pleasure out of. And so I was doing brokerage, running the heating and air company, and I really missed the brokerage side of the world. And so we had grown the heating and air company quite a bit. And I decided, you know, with brokerage, I didn't have employees. I could work from wherever, a laptop and a cell phone, and I could work from anywhere. And so I kind of missed that. And so I went to go sell it. And when I was going to sell it, as a broker doing valuations, Florida, we have an MLS system. So I was able to look at our MLS and see what companies have been selling for. And I realized they were all over the place, right? One company would sell for 2 times or 4 times or 6 times. And there didn't seem to be any rhyme or reason. And I started researching online, and I found if you're doing $10 or $20 million, there was tons of brokers to help you. If you're doing $2 million in sales, there was nobody who really knew anything about it. And so I thought there was an opportunity there. And so I decided that time, my son, let me back up, my son and daughter-in-law ended up buying me out of my heating and air company. They run it today. That's been 7 years ago, I guess, that they bought me out. And so I thought if as a broker, if I'm struggling to find accurate information about selling a heating and air company, what's a heating and air technician who's been in the truck for 20 years going to do, right? What kind of advice is he going to get? So I started making the switch, and I still had some other listings. And I still was selling a little bit of everything, but really focusing on heating and air. And what really, really drove the point home to me is I had sold some guys a pizza restaurant years earlier. They called me up and said, hey, we want to buy another pizza restaurant. You're our good luck charm. And I said, listen, guys, I'm selling heating and air. Now I'm not really doing restaurants. And like, please, we found a restaurant we want. Just come help us. So I said I'd help them. Called the broker, who's a BBF broker in business brokers, Florida, George Antonopoulos, great guy, sells a ton of restaurants. His listing, we ended up putting a deal together. And at each meeting we were at, George was asking my buyers questions that I had no clue what he was talking about. He's talking about leases on Pepsi equipment and all this other stuff. And I'm thinking, I can't even help these guys, right? I'm not doing them any service. And so at that point, I decided I was done. I was just going to do heating and air. I knew the heating and air business because now I'd run it for a few years. And so I kind of cold turkey made the switch. And I've been blessed since then. As of yesterday, we sold our 167th heating and air company. And we've been so fortunate to be able to help a lot of people and build a business and build a brand. And really, to me, I feel like on every deal I go on, I'm able to add value. Right. And on that last deal, my last pizza restaurant, I couldn't add any value. I was getting paid for being there, and I wasn't adding anything to the equation, and I didn't want to do that anymore. And so we made the switch, and for me, it's been the right decision. So long, drawn-out story, and I'll kind of shut up there and see your thoughts or questions on that.
No, it's great, and I love it because I've taken lots of notes and just thinking along the way of so many things, right? And I love the, you know, going way back in that story about the midlife crisis where you didn't buy a car, a sports car or a Corvette or something. You bought a pool cleaning business, and the what others would label as a workaholic side of you is just like, I love business. I realized that for myself years ago. People would ask me, like, what are your hobbies? Like, I like reading business books and studying business and thinking about business. And it's, you know, it's just one of those things, right? It's a part of you if you've got it. And I think what's interesting too in your pathway is the challenges that you had along the way and solved that in different ways that then became the niche. And it's fascinating because I just saw an article this morning. It was about real estate, but it was like real estate in like a small Italian village. And it's like, it's an amazing deal. And it's an amazing deal because there's nothing there. There's nothing to do. There's no doctors. There's no entertainment. There's nothing to do. That's why it's a good deal, because no one wants to be there, versus downtown New York City. It's expensive because there's a ton to do there. And then your journey to North Florida, where there's, you know, the reason it's not a hotbed for business brokerage is because there's not a lot of import of people who want to come there and buy businesses, which then led you into the HVAC world, which then led you into the HVAC brokerage. And now you're doing it nationwide, right? So you've gone past this kind of North Florida kind of area focus to a industry focus, which with the HVAC, all over the country. And so talk about that as a transition away from just, let's say, local ones to everywhere. Anywhere an HVAC business is being sold, and Patrick Lang is there.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you talk about the small village. Well, I moved to a small village, right? The town, I think, had 200, the whole town had 200 people in it. Our county is 13,000 people. So to say it's a small town is an understatement, right? And there's not a lot of people buying or selling businesses there, right? It's family generational kind of thing. And so when I first made the switch, I sold a couple in Florida, and then somebody called me from Georgia and said, hey, you know, can you help me here? And I thought, well, you know, I'm my office now is 10 minutes from the Florida-Georgia line. So we're in Georgia, basically. And then somebody called me from the Carolinas. And then somebody called me from somewhere else. And through marketing and through different things that we did, I was starting to build a brand. And all that kind of happened as COVID was happening. Mm-hmm. And COVID was incredible for my business, right? Being in Florida didn't know COVID existed, right? Compared to the rest of the country, you know, it's certainly different. I was flying round trip from Gainesville, Florida to LA for $250 round trip. And I was one of the only people on the plane. Every seat was first class. Every rental car was available. Every hotel room was available. It was dirt cheap. I would leave Gainesville, Florida at 6 a.m, get to LA at 10. I would have 2 meetings that day and fly back the next morning for cheaper than I could drive to Atlanta. I mean, or drive to Miami. It was incredible. And so next thing I know, I went from East Coast to West Coast, and then everything kind of backfilled in between. And so back to the journey, I'm a believer that everything happens for a reason, right? And I think it's not, you know, what happens to us, but what happens for us. But I think it's always finding that opportunity of where's a lesson that can be learned? What can I fix this here? What can I do? And looking back at what was struggles is really what got us to where we are today. And we're fortunate that those things happened, or I wouldn't have been here.
And so as you go global, let's say, or nationwide, like, how do you approach that? How do you market that? How do you get the brand out? Because that's a bigger game than a regional side. Obviously, it's a little easier with an industry focus. Claudio Vilas was on the show, and he focuses on roofing. And so had that conversation. You've basically done that. And I know that you were assistants in his kind of journey as well. But like, how do you make that transition? How do you go bigger with the brand? And then how do you actually service all of that, like, effectively?
Yeah. So I live on an airplane, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you talked about my travel schedule, and I travel a ton, right? I'm Delta's premium, whatever you can be. I'm IHC hotels, whatever you can be. I'm Hertz rent-a-car, as top as you can be. And so I'm on the road a ton. And part of that's my choice, right? I feel an obligation for our clients. For most of our clients, it's the biggest sale of their life. Mm. And for most of our clients, they've never done it before. And so I think in deals, brokers get numb to that, right? I mean, I think, you know, you do so many deals and it becomes a transaction instead of somebody's life. So I tell every seller, if they want to meet me, I'll be there. And if they want me at a meeting, I'll be there. Now, they may have to push it off a week, right? It may have to work around my schedule somehow, but I'll be there. Because once again, many of them are scared, right? They don't know what they're doing, right? They're looking for us for guidance. And so as a result, I travel a ton. That's how we manage. And I've got staff now. My first 3 years, it was just me. I answered the phone. I responded to every email. I did all that. And now we've been fortunate that we've grown and my son's joined the business. My youngest has joined the business. And we've got two other people that are working with us, helping us in the process. And so building a team has become helpful. And we've really just started the team building in the last 2 years. But the building a brand to me, and I don't remember, I'm going to mess up the quote, however I say it, but I heard somewhere is you earn the right to charge a premium by giving away good information. Mm. And so, you know, I've got a YouTube channel, I'm active on social media. I mean, do these things and I try and everything we do and the people who help me in my marketing, their marching orders are, it's not a sales pitch. We're giving away the information to help somebody. Right. And I want somebody who owns a heating and air company to know who I am and say, man, I have to be an idiot to go with somebody else. Right. This guy's given all the information and I do videos saying, if you're going to sell it by yourself, here's the things you need to do. And if you're going to go with another broker, here's the things you need to ask. And I just believe that by educating people, there's a lot of people who I'm helping that are just going to go do it themselves in their own way and good for them. There's enough people out there that call me that I can support my family, pay my bills and do the things that I need to do. And so we've done that by giving away information for 7 years. And it started with a video and I'd get excited with a person a month watching it, right? And now, yeah. Now I think we just passed 2.2 million views on my YouTube channel, which for most of the world is not a big amount, but for a guy standing in his backyard talking about selling heating and air companies, to me, it's a big deal. And so, and all of every week we read an article a week and in that article, it's about giving value. It's about helping somebody out because most people don't know who to ask. Right. And the scary part is in our industry and in lots of industries, there's a few bad apples. Right. And sometimes they take advantage of people. And so if it's the biggest sale of their life and they've never done it, and they don't know who to ask. I want to at least arm them. So if I'm not the right guy, because I'm not right for everybody and I don't claim to be, but if I'm not the right guy, when they're interviewing that guy or girl who's going to help them with selling their business, that they at least know what to ask them. Right. And they know what should be normal. In a process. And so we do that. And that's really been the driver behind our success is giving away information.
And I love it because I think, you know, one of the biggest challenges that you have that all business brokers have is awareness and education, like kind of going to your story of when you sold the HVAC company. And it was just like, there's no way, there's no resource. And even the challenge you had when you sold the pool cleaning company where it was too big, you had to break it up into parts. You had to do that. You were dealing with it all on your own. And so, you know, how much of the stats about 80% of the businesses don't sell and those, you know, common things that float around is just an awareness problem. There's some of it, they try to do it themselves. And then some of it's just awareness education that there's even a thing about selling a business instead of closing the doors. I was talking to somebody the other day and they had a client where, you know, the thought they had beforehand was just close it down, just shut the business down because they don't know better. And where, you know, somebody who starts a heating and air conditioning company is just doing it because they got into the trades, they got something they liked, turned into a business, it grew, and then what, right? So I love the fact that you're just giving away information, you're putting all of that out there, because it's the best thing to do is just literally flood the market with content that's helpful and valuable. And then I love what you said, because this has always been my stance, which is people will decide, right? Because I always have people ask me, like, well, why do you give so much stuff away? It's like, if you're the kind of person who's going to take some info and do it yourself, then you weren't my client anyway. And that's okay, right? Some people like working on their own car. right? When I watch a video on YouTube to fix something on the car, I'll watch and go yes or no. Like, yes, I could take this on, or hell no, I need to hire a professional. Like, this is beyond me. And like, I love that because, you know, there's also a limited amount of bandwidth while you're doing, you know, close your 167th deal while focusing on this with the HVAC. You know, there's only so much of you and the team to go around. So you really want the people who come to you that want the help. And so where have you seen much shift in the awareness and education level of HVAC owners, where let's say 6-7 years ago, nobody knew much about this, and you're really seeing an impact from your content and just general contact, IBBA, the BBF, just like more of awareness in business owners, or is it still a big gap?
Definitely more awareness. And part of it is private equity and luck, timing, fate, whatever you want it to be. Private equity really made a push into heating and air. And there's been a lot of consolidation the last few years. And so most industry events and industry publications talk about acquisitions, right? Where before, I don't think it was talked about. So it's become more common. And private equity firms are beating the phones, right? They're calling these owners every single day. Hey, you want to sell your company? You know, we'd love to buy your company. So they're getting attacked. I hate to say it that way, but that's the reality. They're getting attacked from all angles. And so I think they're a more informed consumer, maybe not more educated, right? They've heard it. They've heard what people are saying. People get up on stage and say, oh, I sold my company for $20 million. And oftentimes they're lying, but they're at least saying it and they're talking about it. So I think we have a more informed consumer out there. And so that's made it probably easier for my information to travel, because 10 years ago, they probably weren't looking up what does private equity even mean, or, you know, what multiples are being paid for a business. They didn't know that existed. Where now they're hearing that, and now they're probably looking for some information where my article or my video or my post may make sense now and help answer those questions.
If you're listening to this and thinking, I want this level of authority, I just don't have the time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. And that's what we build for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and authority signals, everything you need that we've talked about here. So if you want this impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it would look like for your business. Now back to the episode. Yeah, it's an interesting shift, right? Because the biggest challenge that you have, especially from a marketing and sales perspective, anybody has, is the person who doesn't know what they don't know, right? They don't know what they don't know, because then they can't even search for it. They're not even aware. It's not on their radar. Like, if somebody doesn't know that they don't know that you can exit a business or their business brokerage exists or acquisitions, then they can't even solve their own problem because they don't even know what exists. So I like what you said, like informed versus educated. And then, you know, my question for you is, okay, so you got people who are informed. They saw somebody on stage, $20 million, got some, you know, 300 times multiple or whatever stuff they're making up. They leave out the details about having to stay on the business and what it is all involved. And then, like, how do you deal with that informed but not educated person? Like, you know, and what are the biggest things you're seeing that they're not educated? What's the gap still?
Yeah, probably the biggest gap is valuation, right? Okay. I heard the guy down the street sold for X amount of dollars and my company is better, bigger, faster than his. I break a lot of hearts, right? At the end of the day, I'm not a guy that's going to blow smoke, right? And so one of my most watched videos on my YouTube, it's called Your Baby's Ugly. And for most of these owners, it's their baby, right? You know, they've spent the last 20 or 30 years growing this business. And a guy like me comes in and says, hey, your baby's ugly and nobody wants it. So it's a horrible conversation to have. And I'm doing everything I can to have those conversations when they're 50, not when they're 70, right? And that's part of the giving away information, speaking on any stage they'll let me, or being on any podcast that I can be on, because they don't know who to ask. They heard something, they think it's true because it was at the trade show, and that's what they're operating under. And now they wait another 10 years and it's too late, right? And so So trying to give away that information to say, hey, what you're doing is not what somebody's paying for. And here's what a buyer's really going to pay for. And here's what they really mean when they call you and they're offering you something. And so we try to do that. So if nothing else, if they don't know, it makes them think, wow, I didn't know about that. Let me look in more into that. Or how is a maintenance agreement treated? Or what about warranty work? Or what about the leases on vehicles? Or things that if you've never sold a business, you've never had to think about, right? You assumed you just sold the business. Well, there's the downside of business brokerage to me, unlike other things, is we don't get to shut the business down on Monday and say, okay, we're going to sell it. It's going to stay closed until next Monday. And we're going to get all these things taken care of. And then Monday, we're going to open back up. We're closing on Monday and they're still running service calls, right? And there's gas cards that need to be given out, and there's insurance that has to be in place, and there's payroll that has to be set up, and there's accounts and supply houses that have to be done. So we have to have all these things going in the background. And often sellers don't think about that. And many uninformed buyers don't either, right? There's a lot of educated buyers in the marketplace that are doing consolidation, but there's also people who went to a seminar and they said, buy a boring business like heating and air and you're going to get rich and all these fancy things are going to happen. But they never thought about that. They never thought about, hey, that technician, she has to get gas tomorrow. How's she going to get gas? Right. And they have to buy supplies someplace, and who's going to buy supplies, and what about their health insurance, and what about the SEO that's going on behind the scenes, and what about the marketing guy they have on there who's doing the marketing? You know, there's all these things that people don't think about, because they don't do it every day, rightfully so, right? I don't fix my own air conditioner because I don't fix air conditioners for a living. And so thank goodness my son does. And so I can call him and he can send somebody over to take care of it. But you know, we don't do it all day long, and it's changing. And once again, back to it's the biggest sale of their life. And there's all this emotion tied into it as well. So it's not just, hey, it's a transaction, I'm going to write a check. There's everything else that goes with it.
Yeah. And to that point, right? Because the business is operating, things are still moving forward to today, like it was yesterday, even as the owner changes. And yeah, it's, I could see that where, you know, it's those challenges and just imagining the transactions where somebody does essentially a for sale by owner, right? And they're trying to sell it themselves. And then what happens with that buyer that might not be a professional, let's say HVAC buyer. It's different if you are, because you've done it before and you've learned some lessons along the way. It's another one to think about, like when there's no intermediary involved, which has the experience in it. So one of the things too for you, and you said this in kind of in the opening part, but I think it's important, it's like the deal size and what you do, because it's not just about large deals with you. I know a lot of business brokers, they aspire to go up market, do larger deals, larger ones. You're like, hey, if you're HVAC and I can help you, then I will help you and I will be there. You know, what does that look like from a size standpoint? You know, how do you adjust, if at all, like what you provide, how you help them, or how have you built it in a way that scale, whether somebody's doing $1 million a year or 20 million?
Yeah. Great question. And so it's a different process for somebody doing $1 million in sales than somebody doing $20 million in sales, right? We'll do two a year, typically over $10 or $15 million in sales. So the bulk of what we do is probably $1.5 million in sales to 5 million. That seems to be our sweet spot. Not intentional, but one, there's a bunch of them, right? It's a lot of people are in the heating and air space because they didn't like their boss. They got a license and started their own company. And now they've just been taking care of people for 20 or 30 years. And so it's just grown because they've taken great care of people, not because they designed it to grow, not because they planned on growing. It just grew, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of those people in that size. And the reality is, and this is my personal opinion, but if you're doing $30 or $40 million in sales, you're probably a pretty sharp business person, right? At some level, you don't luck your way into $30 million in sales. So you could probably fumble your way through a sale, and you probably have accountants and attorneys and stuff in your Rolodex that could help you in that process. If you're doing $1.5 million in sales, you're probably a very good technician and not a sophisticated business owner. Not saying you're stupid by any stretch of the imagination. You're doing $1 million in sales and you've stayed in business for 20 years. That's something you absolutely should be proud of. What I'm saying is you probably don't have a Rolodex full of M&A attorneys that are going to help you through that process. And so they need somebody like me in their corner, I think. And I'm a pretty simple guy. And so I seem to do well with them, right? I mean, I think it's, we talk about the same things. We enjoy the same hobbies. It's not just work for me. It's pleasure. And I get to meet a lot of great people. I love the blue collar aspect. I love the, didn't like my boss 25 years ago, started a business. I raised my family. I've supported every little league team along the way. I've employed people and helped them buy their first house and pay for their things. That I love that. I get excited when I walk into a business with that. And so it resonates well with me, more so than this is the 20th deal I'm buying this week and it's just another transaction. And I feel often that I'm kind of in that seller's corner more, because they need help, right? If there's a professional buyer that's bought 200 companies, the cheaper they can buy it and the better deal they can get, it's better for their company, right? I don't think that's not a bad thing against them, but that's their best interest. For from a seller's perspective, they've never done it. They don't know what they're saying yes or no to. And so so that's part of it. And like if I go to market with a $10+ million sales company, I can call 10 or 15 buyers and there's going to be a bidding war. Right. I know the buyers are going to buy it. I know what they're going to do. I turn them loose. They're going to come back to where our price needs to be and we're going to sell it. If it's $1.5 million company, we've got to market it. We've got to go find a buyer. We've got to educate the public about it being for sale. We've got to brag about the business, what opportunities exist. And in doing that, the hardest part of my job, I often tell sellers, is I've got to let everyone know your business is for sale and no one know that it's your business. Right. So we've got to maintain confidentiality through that entire process, but get as many eyes as we can on it. And so we've gotten, I feel very good in our practice about doing that. There's often we'll go live with the listing in a good market today and we could get 200 NDAs in the first day because of the marketing system that we've set in place to get those eyes on there. And I believe more eyes on a listing really help create more of a fair market value. Right. It's the market's going to speak. If you got one buyer there trying to buy it, it's hard to say his price or her price is not good or bad. If you've got 50 that are making offers or 5 that are making offers, you should see where the market really is in that scenario, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, it does. And I know, you know, you and I spoke about Jim Parker offline. He was on the show. His big thing is, you know, it's all about that competitive tension. Right? Like, how do you as a good business broker create that competitive tension where it will result in what's best for your client, who is the seller?
For everyone. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't want anybody to leave the deal thinking I've got a bad deal, right? I want it to be fair for everyone. I joke that I want the seller to think they could have gotten more, but they got a fair deal. I want the buyer to think they could have paid a little less, but they got a good deal. And I want them both to think that I got paid too much money. And if that's the case, then we all win in the process. And so that's the ultimate goal. We go into a transaction. I don't think somebody has to lose, because 6 months later, that buyer is going to want to call the seller and ask them a question. If the seller feels they got ripped off, they're not going to answer the questions, right? And vice versa. And so I want it to be a fair deal for everyone. And I think more eyes on a listing and more competition dictates what's fair in the marketplace.
Yeah. And then the market will dictate that relative to what it's going to be paid. So question for you, because I think about this. So you're talking where I don't want to say stereotypical, but let's just imagine the HVAC owner said 20 years ago, couldn't work for someone else, didn't want to do it. I know some people who got out of the military, didn't really have good skills other than shooting at other people. And it's like, I got to do something with my skills, right? And so then they start this. They've been doing it for 20, 30 years. They've got this business. Thanks to you, they help, you know, you help sell it. Then this new generation of people buying their way into HVAC instead of founding and starting their way into HVAC. Have you seen anything in the last 6, 5, 6, 7 years where those buyers are now turning around and selling? Are you seeing a shift in the market where the buyers are coming and they didn't found it and they're doing something different? Like, where have you seen that change already in the dynamics?
Yeah, absolutely. A huge change. Great question. So my first 2 years, I think every company I sold was a mom and pop buying another mom and pop. Right. In the town next over and wanted to expand, or in the same town, or their kids are going to join the business and they want to grow a little bit bigger. Then my second 2 years, almost everything I did was private equity or consolidated. It was like this mad rush and they were gobbling up everything. Then the last, let's call it 3 years, it's been a combination of a little bit of private equity, a little bit of mom and pop. I have kids whose parents sold their business to private equity and the kids didn't like working there. They didn't have a non-compete, so they're out buying companies. I have a banker whose dad or mom was in the trades and they want to get back to the trades like their family was. There's a lot of seminars going on where people are selling people the dream of business ownership through the ETAs, the common language being used, that, you know, entrepreneurship through acquisition. And they're saying, go buy these boring businesses. And some of those people have come up and bought companies. I bought a heating and air company and I can't fix an air conditioner. Right. So I'm biased to can a buyer who doesn't have any trades ability do it. I think you have to have a different skill set. I sell a lot of companies to a lot of people who can't fix an air conditioner, but they're incredible business minds. Right. They come from a technology world or a marketing world, or they have different levers that they can pull. When I bought heating and air company, I couldn't fix an air conditioner, but I could control what a technician looked like when they showed up to the house. I could control how the phone was answered. I could control our pricing. I could control how we look to a consumer. So there was things that I could control. And so I think that's evolved so much. And I think I did 24 deals last year, and I would guess probably 8 of them maybe have been private equity. 4 or 5 of them would have been some sort of family, whether it's a son or a daughter getting into the trades, or aunt and uncle were in the trades, something like that. And then others just complete, I was an insurance agent, now I want to be a heating and air girl, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the market's really evolved, which I think is great for the market, because I think many people in the trades ran the business the way their boss ran the business, right? That was the only education or experience training they got. They watched where they first started working. That's what they did. And so they did it. Or that's what they did. So they do the exact opposite, right? They hated the way they do it. So we're doing it this way. Now we've got people who've been in the auto business or been in the marketing business or been in the banking business. So they may understand finances a little bit better, or they may understand offering financing. Prime example. A lot of older heating and air guys or girls don't believe in offering financing. They don't believe anybody needs it. I have a younger crowd that's, and I heard this saying and I stole it. They said, listen, Christmas comes the same time every year, but people don't ever plan for it, right? Who do you think is planning for their air conditioner to break on accident? Now it's $12,000 or $15,000. Nobody. And so I have companies that offer everyone 100% financing. And so I think it's really evolved the business. And some people treat private equity like it's the devil and it's ruining the business. My belief is it's opening eyes and it's looking at it from a different perspective. And so everything private equity does is not good or bad, but I think you could steal some of the stuff that they do and you could understand some of what they're doing from a consolidation and a growth and a marketing and a systemization. And so I think there's a little bit of everything that where I see people that are super successful is they take a little bit of it all. Right. They learn a little bit from here and they learn a little bit from there. And each one of those things they're applying to the business.
Yeah. And it's like you almost need a turnover of companies in the market to bring in outside perspectives enough to introduce those things that a company isn't going to do because that's just not what they do because they have their identity. And it's interesting how you said, you know, people grow up in the business and just copy what they learn from their boss, or they do the opposites, you know, kids and their parents as well. They're exactly like their parents.
Same thing with kids taking it over, right? I mean, I have a lot of business that we sell that's second and third generation. And why do you do it this way? That's the way we've done it for 50 years, right? That's what we do. And so they've never seen another approach. And so I think that's where fresh set of buyers brings a fresh set of eyes. Right. And I think that shaped the business. Not all of it's good. And I don't want to sugarcoat it and say it is, but I just think that there's an opportunity there. And it's a long, long drawn out way to answer your question, but the market drastically has shifted over the last 6 or 7 years.
Yeah. And I'm wondering too, not to get down this rabbit hole too much, but I'm curious as well, how many people are starting or buying HVAC companies, roofing companies, the boring businesses, because they know they're in the crosshairs of private equity. So they're playing that game. They're not playing I'm going to grow this and then sell it long-term, or like, I'm going to run this for 20, 30 years. How do I get this to the point where I just flip it to private equity?
None. And some are successful, and I'm getting calls now from people who bought 3 years ago, and they thought because private equity could do it, they could do it. And now they're struggling, saying, hey, I need you to sell this. So once again, I think it's good and bad, right? They came in and disrupted the market, and now it's creating other opportunities for other people. And so, there's a lot of, it's kind of crazy. When private equity first started getting involved, my phone ring every day and say, oh, I have this thesis. I want to buy a $10 million company doing $1 million in EBITDA. And it was like everybody got the same playbook. And so the first year, everything went that way. And then it was, hey, I saw private equities doing this and I want to do it on a smaller scale and then build it to sell to those private equity companies and help them in their consolidation. And so now we're seeing that as well. And I think there's good and bad from it. And, you have to pick and choose the good parts.
And it's interesting too, because you and I both know, like if I think of the .com era where venture capital came in and then everything with a domain was a big deal in the late 90s. And it was like the new greatest thing and everyone should get in on it. It feels similar to that. It's like a gold rush in a sense. In this case, it's the private equity kind of HVAC gold rush. And then it gets to a bubble point and then it stops and it evens out. And it's better for consumers. It's better for the rest of us. But like the market evens itself out and you have, the big and the medium and the small players. And it feels like that. And I love what you said. You know, it's like everyone wanted to be like private equity was doing it, and then everyone wanted to do it. And then you just kind of, that's the ones that can make it work. And then, hopefully, theoretically for the consumers, all of us with air conditioning units then or heating units, it's just a better marketplace for us, right? Like it just—
And it's happened before, right? Historically, consolidation took place in the trades and then a lot of them failed and went away and went chasing the new shiny object. And then it happened again. And then so history repeats itself, right? It's a little different each time. And we talked about it earlier. Now all of a sudden roofing super attractive to them. And so now they're looking at roofing and everybody's rushing to roofing. And so, it ebbs and flows, right? The housing market, the stock market, it all goes up and down, and that'll continue in this space as well.
Yeah. So interesting. And then there's the part, and we'll probably talk about this somewhat in the after show, but then there's the whole boring business that can't be replaced by AI. I would guess to say, and I would bet a lot of money, the moment where an AI robot could fix an air conditioning unit, it doesn't matter for any of us anyway. Like it's over for us at that point, which means this is, the thing where a lot of people are going to see it as the long term. You go to college and get a degree that might be replaced or,
And that's happening. Like that. I'm getting calls now from people saying that specifically, saying, I'm worried what AI is going to do to me. And so now I'm looking at this and that's real.
I think it's going to be a fascinating resurgence and growth in that because it's necessary and it can't be replaced and can't be outsourced, can't be moved overseas.
Somebody physically has to do it. Now there's parts of it that AI is certainly streamlining. Now you see air conditioning systems have monitoring systems in it to notify the company that, hey, something's going wrong and here's what it may be, that kind of stuff. But still physically somebody has to show up and do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so fascinating. All right. Let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about the broker growth tips. So you have a fascinating journey, like we talked about in the intro and you shared, where you're in one part of Florida, things are going great. You didn't realize the full benefit of being along the coast and what that would mean for business brokerage. Then you move and then you HVAC and then, all of that. But you've done amazing job with growing, like you said, the YouTube channel. When you think about your growth, the things that you would put on a list, what other brokers could do, what do you have on there for what you think falls under the growth marketing strategies?
Yeah. And the first thing's not on the list, but hopefully it goes without saying, you got to be a good broker, right? I mean, you've got to know your craft, in my opinion. After that, it to me, first thing is become an expert, right? I chose a niche that's industry specific. I see great brokers that are doing it town specific, right? They're the expert in selling a business in Tallahassee, Florida, right? And so if you're in Tallahassee and they understand the laws and they understand zoning and they understand all these things that I wouldn't know coming to there. So I think becoming the expert, then, and we already talked about it earlier, is giving away information, right? And I think that's how you're viewed as the expert, right? If if everywhere they look for buying or selling heating and air, there's me giving away information. When it's time for them to sell, I'm hoping that I at least get a shot at helping them do it. And I'm viewed as the expert. I find if I'm on stage at an event, when I get off stage, I'm viewed as the expert, right? I'm the guy up there talking about this. And so if they read my article in an industry publication, when they call me, I'm viewed as an expert. If they've watched 50 of my videos, when they call me, I'm viewed as the expert. So I think it's giving away the information to help solidify the fact that you're the expert and know what you're talking about. And then building a brand around that, right? I think brokers, we're so worried about confidentiality, and we should, but most brokers keep themselves a secret, right? I didn't know what a business broker was until I became one. And I had sold seven companies, bought and sold seven companies in that period of time. As a brokerage community, I think we need to do a better job at educating the general public about what a broker is. If you were to sell a house, you know what a realtor is, right? I mean, there's no question about that.
Yeah.
Most people don't know what a broker is, right? They've never even heard of one. And so I think, you know, building that brand, and for us, it's selling heating and air. We do plumbing as well, but the bulk of what we do is heating and air. Building that brand around, and I get introduced now at brokers events. Here's Patrick. He's the guy who sells heating and air companies, right? And I'm a broker and I believe, stole that from Ryan Serhan. He talks about you're a realtor and for me, I'm a broker and I specialize in selling heating and air companies. If they call me today, I'm looking for a tree trimming company. I'm not your guy. Call Jim Parker, right? That's not, and we send business back and forth. That's not what I do. And I couldn't add value to that. And it's not fair to you to work with me when I can't add value to what you're doing. And so that goes down to business and brand. And then probably the final thing, and this is a pet peeve of mine and it probably shouldn't be, but man, I see brokers cash big checks and then they're driving the Porsche and they're driving the big boat and they're driving this. And then I'll talk to them about doing some marketing. Like, oh, I'm not going to pay for that. It's like, wait a minute. That car isn't going to earn you anything. You know, I mean, building a business. Too many people view themselves as a salesman or a saleswoman and rely on their broker, that firm that they're with to be the rainmaker. And to me, you've got to treat business brokerage like a business and building a business and investing back in your business. I spend a ridiculous amount of money in marketing, and between direct mail campaigns and email blasts and press releases and videos and all the things that we do, I spend a ridiculous amount of money, but it's an investment into my business. And every year we sell more businesses than the year before because of the investment we're making. So I'll get off my soapbox on that one. Everybody who's driving a Porsche is going to send me hate mail that I shouldn't say anything about their car. I drive an old pickup truck with 80,000 miles on it, you know, because if I get a big payday, I'm going to say, what other direct mail piece can I do? Or what other marketing can I try? We're running TV ads now. We're doing other things to try to expand the box of getting out in a competitive world, because I treat it like a business. At the end of the day, I've got to feed the business.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so true, right? Because this is one of the things that drives me crazy from the outside perspective. Same thing as you when talking to a broker and they don't want to invest. And it's just like, then where are you working with clients who are running a business and it's owner dependency and it's not enough systems and it's not enough in marketing? And then you as a broker, like you said, essentially a salesperson instead of a business, treating it like a business and growing it. And all of your list, like being an expert, giving away information, building a brand. You know, I think one of the best parts is that, you know, when you give away lots of information, I think we're firmly in an era right now where we're no longer in the information age. And the reason why I say that, and this is it'll probably catch on at some point, but we're no longer in the information age. We're in the instant answer age because people know they have all the information at their fingertips. You and I remember a time when there wasn't the internet. If you needed something, you had to go find it or call somebody or go somewhere and you didn't have it. And so now that everyone expects answers to everything they've got, what they want is the wisdom that goes with it, right? Because all of us can watch enough videos to consume info, and then we need the expert that's the authority on that to solve something we can't solve on our own. And so that's why I love your model of just giving away all the information, because information is now commoditized. It's not special.
To me, it's make yourself easy to be found, right? Mm-hmm. If you're looking for the information, if I've got 80 videos out there on selling air companies, right? How many other people have made videos on selling heating and air companies? So it's easy for them to find me intentionally, right? I mean, that's the whole plan for me. And you're 100% right. Everything we preach to our clients that their business is not worth much, we're doing the same. We've done the same thing as brokers for our own, right? And I think when I made that shift, how about building a practice that you can sell, right? Building, you know, most of them, it's a job, right? And, but what about building a practice that has value and that you could sell? And if you build that business, it runs better, it runs easier, it's more smooth. And to me, it gives a better client experience. And at the end of the day, once again, back to most of our sellers have never sold a business. Most of them, it's the biggest sale of their life. And most of them don't know who to ask. Being able to fill that gap and hold their hand through the process is delivering value. A lot of value, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I love that list. I think it's a great list. Any brokers listening, like I would say that's the list. Like if you could do those five things, starting with being good at your craft, actually doing a good job and taking it seriously and the education that goes into it through all the stuff you said. And now it's a good transition because you're talking about the people, you know, selling a business for the first time and need someone holding their hand. Now let's talk about the deal that got away. This is the segment of the show where we talk about the lessons of the lost deal. It's funny because we chatted about this and I even told you we started this process months ago and then scheduling and just busyness and wanting to make sure we had some dedicated time for this. What you thought maybe was then versus now. So I'd love to hear, you know, some kind of cautionary tale experience that, you know, brokers, sellers, buyers can take something from as like a try not to do this, or please don't be like this, situation.
Great, great question. And you're right. Well, I gave you one months ago, whenever we first started talking, and I've probably had 10 collapse on me since then, right? At the end of the day. And I try not to dwell on those. And so I'll stay with that one. And because that one happens a lot, right? We get an offer and begin due diligence and the seller believes the business is sold and it's far from being sold. I tell everyone, I don't sleep at night until the check clears, right? Mm-hmm. Up until then, everybody's a liar. As far as I'm concerned, I hate to be negative about that, but that's the reality in the way I think. Until the check clears, everybody's lying to me. And so I had a seller recently that we were supposed to close. I don't know what the closing date was, 30th of the month. And the buyer said, hey, I'm going to need to push it back. Bank said it's going to be a few weeks. And the seller went into panic mode because they bought a house. The listing was in Connecticut. They bought a house in Florida and they put a non-refundable deposit down on the house. And they said, they're calling me panicking. And I'm like, well, what would you like me to do? I told you, don't make any changes. The business is not sold. And they're panicked. We're going to lose, I don't remember what the figure was, $50,000. We're going to lose this money. And I'm like, I told you, don't do anything until the check clears. And so they're panicking because the buyer needs a couple extra days. And the buyer's on, he's like, I'm writing you a check for $2 million. It should not be a big deal if it waits 2 days for this to happen. They're in panic mode, calling me five times a day about what are we going to do about the house? And I'm good, but I'm not that good. I mean, I can't make the bank do something the bank's not ready to do. And so the, it was a few days. It ended up being like 4 days, and I don't know how many texts and emails and everything that came across over this. I'm losing money I put down on a house in Florida because the business had, and so I said, well, go buy the house. We don't have the money. We need the money from the business to go buy the house. Well, on what planet is it okay to go do that? And so this one didn't get away. It almost got away. We were able to salvage it. We were able to contact the realtor in Florida, let them know we're legitimately under contract. We're just waiting on the bank. The bank sent a letter saying they're going to close in a few days. But it caused a horrible relationship between the buyer and seller. Because the seller's freaking out and now calling the buyer, yelling at the buyer. And the buyer's calling me saying, I have nothing to do with them buying a house. I told them I was going to buy the business. We had an estimated close date. We said it could be moved back or forth. There may be, because I'm waiting on the bank. They didn't get the bank the information they were supposed to get the bank. So it wasn't even our fault that it was delayed. It was the seller's fault that it was delayed. And it creates this chaos that doesn't need to be created. And so we were able to fix it. We were able to get across the finish line. So I guess it's not one that technically got away. But sellers who think the deal's done the day we get an offer. And I tell all sellers, listen, when I'm reading an offer, I'm not excited. And it's intentional because I don't believe it, right? I'll be excited when you say the wire hit your account, then I'm excited. Until then, we're still shopping. We're still trying to find the right buyer to get across the table. I think it's that. That would probably be one, is making sure sellers understand what's going on. And another kind of segment, same thing. And I think this might have actually been the one I first told you about, but taking their foot off the gas. That's really, that one happens more. And in a weather dependent business like heating and air, it really can happen where, you know, if it's not 90 degrees and things aren't running, it doesn't break. A 70 degree day is the worst kind of day for a heating and air person. Nothing's running, nothing's breaking, right? If the windows are open, it's a bad day. And so too many people stop the marketing, stop the spending, stop the growth. And now we've been under contract for 90 days. We're ready to close. And the buyer said, and this actually has happened more than one time. And the deal ended. Buyer says, okay, just give me updated financials. We've been 3 months now since we started. Give me updated financials. And now we're down 25% or 30%. And the buyer says, I'm not going to buy this for that price.
Yeah.
I'm making the money you said it was making. And now they want to retrade the deal, rightfully so, right? I mean, they're buying a business based on cash flow, and now the cash flow is not what it was supposed to be. And I've lost several deals from that. So I didn't mean to stage there. I said two, and I was only supposed to give one, but that's those are two of my most painful memories.
Well, and it's unfortunate it happens. And the theme I hear from both of those is the seller doesn't know how the process works. The seller, like most adults in America, probably at that point in their life, have done enough real estate transactions to assume it's closed and consider it closed, right? Like you get an offer on a house. Everyone says, I sold my house today. I always correct people. I'm like, no, you didn't. Like you got an offer. It's not sold. Like anything could happen and you never know until it's officially done. But you know, get that mindset. And the theme I see between the two is that sellers get the offer. They don't know the process. They don't understand the ramifications of some things that they might decide to do or not do. And they just consider it done, right? In that same mode, because they don't have a frame of reference, they say, oh, we got an offer. That's great. It's going to close in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Okay, we're done. Great. I'm going to go make an offer on a house. I'm going to let my foot off the gas because I'm burnt out anyway, but we got an offer. So my part's done. Like I did my part. I want to go sit on the beach. And it's not, like you said, it's not done until it's done. It's definitely not done. So I think it's interesting, you know, that and hopefully, you know, and it's tough because I'm sure as much as you want to tell sellers, don't do this. And here's what could happen if you let up on the gas or make decisions. People are people. They're going to do what you're going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. In their eyes, they don't know how many deals have fallen apart for you before. Right. They're not in our seat. And, you know, if it doesn't about fall apart before the closing table, I'm nervous, right? There's always going to be something going wrong, and we're part of our job is to keep them alive, and they don't know that, and it's emotional, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's a big deal for everybody.
All about the personal brand. Again, the website, it's businessmodificationgroup.com. Your email will be in the show notes. They can find you on LinkedIn. Really easy. Patrick Lang, business broker. YouTube channel. Obviously, they can find that as well. All that will be in the show notes. And I appreciate you being here. And like so many guests that I have on the show, just the fact that you're a professional, you've done so much for your clients, for the industry, to be a part of this and evolve and grow. And then also just be a part of putting so much content out there to help people in general. I appreciate, and I'm glad that you came on and shared more and you know, help your message getting out there to more people.
Thank you so much. I had a great time and I really appreciate you having me on.
Yes. And for everyone tuning in, hopefully you got some value from this, whether you're a broker, you're a business owner that's looking to sell, you want to buy and you're like, how does this HVAC thing work? And what does a business broker do? And maybe my guru didn't teach me everything I needed to know about buying a boring business. So hopefully you got some value from this and from Patrick. He's an amazing guy. Please make sure to follow him and get in touch with him if you need anything in HVAC, in the heating and cooling. And until next time, remember, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.